Good morning. I know it's the Sunday of July 4th weekend because it's humid and hot and nobody wants to be here or anywhere, and so half of you left to go somewhere else. I'm always amused. Every year, it never fails, people come to D.C. to see the fireworks on the National Mall, and they only do it once, and they learn their lesson, and they go home. And everybody else who lives here who's already learned the lesson just disappears. So I know we're kind of scattered in here a little bit this morning because there's lots of holes to fill in because nobody wants to be here. And I get it. It's not the weekend to be in D.C. This is not the day. So if you are here, I assume you either have nothing better to do or you're just that devoted or some combination of the two. But either way, I'm glad to see those of you who are here. Those of you who aren't here but joining us by Zoom, we miss you, but we understand. So if you are lucky enough to be in Europe this weekend, like some of us are, we're all jealous. And I thought about preaching a sermon on jealousy, but let's not do that. Instead, we'll be in Psalm 66. We're well into summer. Things do slow down a bit here in the summer, which is weird because if you have young kids, it feels like things go faster. But things really do slow down in their own way. The gardens are not slowing down. The weeds are amping up. I get that. Some things go faster, some things go slower. But the days do stretch longer. You have more time to do more things, and so you fill your calendars more. If you're lucky, you get to catch your breath. But this summer season, if you can pay attention to it, if you can be mindful to it, it is an opportunity for joy that we don't have the rest of the year. Kids get to be kids in the summer. They get to chase ice cream trucks barefooted. They get to drink out of the water hose with all the contaminants in it. Kids get to do the fun things that kids do during the summers. Families have reunions. Some of us manage to take long overdue vacations. It's easier sometimes to be grateful, I think, in July, even if it's hot and humid, than it is in January, because we have more things to do, more things to be grateful for. But Psalm 66 doesn't offer that seasonal joy. It offers something deeper, a life that is completely reoriented by gratitude. The joy we read about in Psalm 66 is not just happiness that is contextually based. It's not just that things are going right now, so things are good, so we can be happy. It's a joy that sings because God is faithful when life has not been easy. And that matters deeply, I think, for all of us. No matter where we are right now, if you came here with a great day or if you came here fighting toddlers, I don't know where half of you are probably on that, but it's regardless, there's an opportunity in this text for recognizing that joy can exist regardless of your circumstances. We've been moving through the Psalms this summer, looking not just at their content, but at the posture of faith that they represent. And today's posture is about praise. Not shallow, sugary praise, but the kind that comes from a place of real deliverance. A kind of joy that's born from walking through fire and coming out on the other side. Not untouched, but upheld. So this psalm it's loud. It opens with a shout. It calls all the earth to sing. It's not just one personal expression of joy. This is a communal call, a song that's meant to be shared. So before we go any further, let's hear it together. Together. I'm not going to ask you to read along with me, but I think that would be powerful if we didn't all need one more cup of coffee this morning. But imagine the power of this being a song that's sung by the peoples of all the earth throughout all of time. The word of the Lord from Psalm 66, verses 1 through 9. Make a joyful noise to God, all the earth. Sing the glory of his name. Give to him glorious praise. Say to God, how awesome are your deeds. Because of your great power, your enemies cringe before you. All the earth worships you. They sing praises to you. Sing praises to your name. So come and see what God has done. He is awesome in his deeds among mortals. God turned the sea into dry land, and they passed through the river on foot. There we rejoiced in him who rules by his might forever, whose eyes keep watch on the nations. Let the rebellious not exalt themselves. Instead, bless our God, O peoples. Let the sound of his praise be heard, the one who has kept us among the living and has not let our feet slip. There's a difference between praise and performance. Performance is all about how we look or sound, how we present. Praise is about who we trust. The difference being us or someone else. Performance is, it's easier, it's flashy, it draws people in, it's charismatic. Praise is usually not those things. Praise is difficult. Praise is trying. Praise is hard. Psalm 66 doesn't just shout for joy because things are good. It shouts because God is good. And that is a statement that stands regardless of your circumstances, good or bad. Come and see what God has done, it says, how he turned the sea into dry land. It's a reference, of course, to the Exodus, when God parted the Red Sea and delivered Israel from Egypt. But if you remember, in that moment, there was not praising going around the crowd. It was the exact opposite. There was fear, there was confusion, there was chaos. The Israelites wanted to turn around and go back to Egypt with their tail between their legs and just accept a mantle of slavery. That made more sense to them than crossing a sea on dry land. To take praise and put it in that moment is a reminder of how difficult praise can truly be. It's a memory that's passed down through the generations, and I think that moment becomes easier and more clear as it gets passed down through the generations. But it's not just about ancient history. For the psalmist, this is a present reality. There we rejoiced in God, they say, as if they were there when the seas parted, as if every generation has walked through the sea, been set free, as if everyone has learned that God saves us again and again. Because that's what praise does. It connects memory with a moment. It lifts the past into the present so that we don't forget who God is or who we are. That's why this psalm begins with a shout, because sometimes when the weight of the world feels too much, the best thing you can do is to remember. And that remembering turns into rejoicing. It usually doesn't start that way, but it gets there by the end of the service. Praise retrains us to remember in the present that the God of wonders of the past is the God at work in the now. Praise takes our perspective and switches it around so that rather than trying to fix a problem, we just praise God in the middle of the problem. And we've said this better ways than I ever could. There's a wonderful song that I think does this the best by Benjamin William Hastings. It's called That's the Thing About Praise, where he says that the thing about praise is it doesn't always fix your problems, but it tells you how small they are. That's the perspective shift power of praise. That's the spiritual wisdom of this whole psalm in more modern language. Praise doesn't mean pretending everything's perfect. It means trusting that God is present, powerful, right in the middle of the mess. That God's not observing the parting of the Red Sea from up above, but God is already on the other side of the parting of the Red Sea saying, come check out the view over here on this side. But if we're honest, it's one thing to sing praise songs in church. It's another to sing praise songs gratefully on a Tuesday afternoon. This psalm begins with praise, but it ends in proclamation. The later verses, if you keep reading past verse 9, which we didn't do today, tell the personal story of someone who cries out to God in trouble and was delivered. And then they told someone else about that moment. And that three parts is really the full arc of praise. There's the trouble that sparks it. There's the need, the moment. There's the amazing thing that happens in the middle, but then there's also the telling of all of it to someone else after. The singing is part of this, yes, but the sharing of the moment is the culmination of praise. The writer of Hebrews invites us into that same practice of communal remembering and encouragement. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love, to good deeds, not neglecting to meet together, but encouraging one another. This verse is not a passive-aggressive weapon to be wielded against those who haven't been in church in 3 weeks. It's a reminder of how important it is to show up and do this together with one another, because praise is a communal act of sharing what God has done. Because some days you show up and you have trouble remembering past the troubles of the week, remembering the last time that God did deliver. But somebody sitting on the pew in front of you is having a great week, and they remember it all, and they are there to hold that memory for you so that you don't have to do it all on your own. Because praise is not a solo act. It's a shared act of calling to remember God's faithfulness through all of it. So then we remind each other of what God has done. We strengthen our faith in what God continues to do. And our testimonies to one another become a lifeline, a way to anchor our hope amid uncertainty. And in this way, praise shapes not only our own hearts, but the hearts of those around us, helping us all to stand firm and live as one joyful witness together. So real praise can do nothing but overflow. It has to, it must, to be praised, it has to be shared. Gratitude isn't just something vertical or one-directional, it becomes multi-directional, it's horizontal, it spills out into how we treat one another. It shows up in our compassion. Because God was good to us, we are good to others. Because we have been forgiven, we forgive others. It shapes our generosity, not just that we have been forgiven, but the ways in which we have been forgiven are the ways in which we forgive one another. It moves us to serve. A praising church is a witnessing church. A praising person is a healing presence in their community. And I think we sometimes forget that praise is so formational. When we worship, we're not just expressing how we feel, we're being shaped into a people who remember God's faithfulness. That memory gives us resilience. It trains us to see grace in the mundane, to look for joy in the most unlikely of places. As we hold on to that call to praise, that power of testimony, the psalm invites us into something even more, something that shapes how we live moving forward. Remember verse 9. He has kept us among the living, has not let our feet slip. That is so much more than a statement about the past. It's a declaration that anchors us in the present while pointing us forward to a future. Throughout the whole psalm, we are remembering God's faithfulness in history. And like that Exodus moment when God parted the sea, that whole story of history becomes this foundation for what you do now, for who you trust now. That memory is not just nostalgia, it is a spiritual practice. It reorients us when life feels uncertain to remind us of who God is, who we are, where we are going. When the psalmist says that God has kept our feet from slipping, it's a way of saying that we've been held steady through all of the trials before, and we've come this far by faith, and we can face what comes next because God's faithfulness endures. So here's a pithy little phrase that, if you look too closely at, is very spurious, but somewhat motivational. All of you who are here today have a 100% success rate of surviving everything that you've been through. It's a low bar, but true, yes? And some days, that might be all you're going to get. But it's true, isn't it? that you have survived all of it. Maybe not well, maybe not without casualties, maybe not without consequences, but you did endure it. That's what this memory of God does for the people of God. It's a reminder of, we survived worse than this, and we will survive more than this. What is today? It's just another day. This kind of remembering shifts our posture from fear and scrambling to a calm trust. Not apathy, but something very closely resembling that. It's not that you don't care, it's just that you don't need to care. Not need to worry. So Jesus says, why worry about your life? It's not going to make the hair grow back on your head. It's not going to change the color of any one of them. You can worry about everything as much as you want to. You can worry about what you are going to wear to church on Sunday morning, but honestly, you don't stand a chance to look better than the flowers outside. And God dressed them so beautifully, didn't he? And you can worry about what you're going to eat for lunch and how you're going to argue about that and how you'll manipulate everyone else in your family to go where you want to go. You can do that. That's an okay way to spend your time during the sermon, I guess. But why do that? I mean, even the birds outside don't worry about where the worms are grown if they're organic and fair trade. You don't need to worry about all of these things. You can. You'll just be miserable the whole time. But praise, the kind of remembering that Psalm 66 calls us to, takes all of that worry, all of that anxiety, and says, don't spend your time there. It roots us in the sure ground of God's steadfast love. So even if nothing else is secure, if nothing else is steadfast, if nothing else is firm or set or trustworthy, when the path is completely unknown, at that moment, remember what it's like to stand in front of a sea and watch it part. At that point, remember what it's like to stand at a cross and look up at something amazing and terrifying, and to still know that God is the one in control of all of it. Not that God's causing terrible things, but that none of those terrible things could ever push any of us outside of the realm of God's hold. And in that realization, praise becomes more than a singing or a song type or a category or a genre of music. Praise becomes a stance of the heart, turning us away from the distractions of worry and doubt and turning us toward the one who holds our future. That is praise. This reorientation calls us to step forward with courage. Not because you can control what lies ahead, but because you know who does hold our steps, who keeps our feet from slipping. If you need a visual, for those of you who are visual learners, and I know this is going to pop some bubbles, and I'm really sorry, but you need to hear it. Michael Jackson was not capable of leaning 30 degrees forward and standing all on his own. He cheated. Don't know if you know this or not. He had special shoes that had a slot in them to catch a peg that was on the floor of the stage so he could lock his shoes in and lean forward as far as he wanted to, and the shoes were braced up his calf so that he wouldn't fall over. He cheated. He was a great dancer, but he cheated. That is the visual for Psalm 66. You Christians are not expected to be able to do these amazing things on your own, not even close. But if you can lock your shoes in, if you can stand where God makes sure your feet don't slip, then you can lean into whatever is in front of you and survive a lot of it. All of it. That's the point of all of this. That's the posture of praise. It's turning your face toward the storm and facing it, knowing that somehow in the middle of that storm you'll find strength. And you're not supposed to, but you will. In living this way, we join a long line of witnesses who have praised God through every season of life, and their testimonies strengthen us, and our own praises encourage those around us and those who will follow after us. This is how praise becomes a life-shaping force, by remembering what's gone before us, by trusting the God through all of it, and by moving forward in absolute trust. And so once again, we come to this table, not as individuals, but as a community that remembers, as people who know what it means to be delivered, who knows what it means to cry out and be answered, who know the joy of being upheld by something bigger than ourselves. Because at this table, our praise takes on flesh. Gratitude becomes a meal. Joy becomes a shared experience. We're reminded not just of what God has done, but what God is doing right here, right now, in the middle of all of our messy lives. And if you can't see that, listen to somebody else around the table who can and take courage from it. So come to the table. Come with whatever it is that you're carrying. Come if you feel strong or shaky. Come because God has kept you among the living. Come to give thanks, to taste joy. Come and see what God has done. Let's stand and sing.